back to abolish existing traditions.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the December 1st meeting of the 2015 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. If you have cell phones or electronic devices, please silence them. That includes legislators. There are emergency exits to my right in the back of the room and to my left in the front of the room. If there should be a fire, please don't use the elevator. The first order of business tonight is to do public hearings. The first public hearing, the Tompkins County Legislature will hold the following public hearings at 5:30 p.m. in the legislature chambers. Grant administration for the New York State Community Development Block Grant Award for Tompkins County Healthy Homes Rehabilitation Program number 2. Is there anyone here tonight to speak on that at this public hearing about that? Yes, please go to the microphone, Mr. Mazzarella, and state your name and your municipality, please.
Thanks. I'm Paul Mazzarella, Executive Director of Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services and Better Housing for Tompkins County, and I live in the city of Ithaca. So I'd like to just make a brief report to you on the progress that we are making in the administration of the Healthy Homes Grant. This is a $400,000 grant with funds that are dedicated to helping low-income homeowners improve the condition of their homes. And it has a fairly specific purpose that is different than other housing rehabilitation programs that the county has administered. The Healthy Homes Grant is targeting septic systems, wells, and energy improvements in homes. And so we've been recruiting people who have needs around those specific problems and then assisting them with grant dollars in the form of a forgivable loan. And so far, our goal is to assist at least 23 homeowners in these projects. We currently have 13 either completed or underway projects. And that's relatively quick because this grant just started about 8 months ago. So we're making good progress. There's quite a bit of demand for these funds. And we appreciate your support for helping low-income homeowners fix up their homes here in Tompkins County. That's my report.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else like to speak on the public hearing?
Mike, there's a blue piece of paper. Oh, I'm sorry. Forget it.
Still in the public hearings at this point. All right. There being no other comments, I'm going to close that public hearing. And I'm going to open the second public hearing, which is grant administration of the New York State Community Development Block Grant Award for the Tompkins County Home Ownership Program number 10. Are there any comments on that? Mr. Mazzarella again.
I'm back again. I'd like to spend a few more minutes talking about home ownership in Tompkins County because I think this is a more complex subject than simply fixing up existing homes. And just to put it in perspective, we often think of Tompkins County as being different or even special, and sometimes we're right about that. And particularly our housing market here is quite a bit different than the rest of the region's housing market. Nationally, what we saw was from 2000 to about 2006, a huge run-up in housing prices that created a bubble that burst, resulting in many regions in the country severely declining housing prices. That didn't happen here. We saw a fairly brisk run-up in housing prices, and then after 2007 to 2010, prices plateaued, and then they've been rising again. In the first 6 months of this year, the median price of a house sold in Tompkins County was $223,000. That was the second highest price of any county or metro area in upstate New York. The only place that had slightly higher prices than Tompkins County was Columbia County, which I think is in the universe of the New York City housing market in many respects. And their median price was $225,000, so just a little bit higher than ours. The high cost of for-sale housing in Tompkins County is forcing many residents who would like to be living in Tompkins County to live elsewhere. And one result of that is that we see a large number of people commuting to work in Tompkins County but not being able to afford to live here. This particular grant is trying to address that by helping low-income people buy homes. The goal of this program is to help 19 low-income homeowners achieve homeownership, and to date, we have assisted 13 people in buying homes. There's another 7 or 8 that are in the queue. That means they've been approved for purchase, but they're looking for a house. And frankly, the biggest challenge for this is not finding people who want to buy houses and not finding people who are qualified to buy houses, but it's finding houses that are appropriately priced for them. And what we're seeing in this is that very few of these homes are being purchased in the Ithaca urban area. These funds cannot be spent in the city of Ithaca, by the way. It's for every place in Tompkins County except the city of Ithaca. But in the Ithaca urban area, prices are high, so it's, again, forcing people to find homes for $150,000 or less, and they generally are finding those homes on in areas that are farther away from the urban area, like in Groton, right? So I'd say Groton is one of the prime places where housing affordability still exists to somewhat of a reasonable degree here in Tompkins County. We've just about committed all of the funds for this grant. We recently applied for another grant from New York State. Very shortly, I hope we will hear whether that's successful or not. But if it's not successful, I think there will be a gap in the ability of people to buy homes here in Tompkins County that needs to be filled. And INHS and Better Housing are doing that together with other sources of money. I'd say the good news that I can report about homeownership is last year INHS and Better Housing combined helped 98 homeowners succeed in buying their first homes. That's the highest number that we've ever achieved. And again, it's running counter to the national trend. Nationally, home ownership in the United States reached a peak of about 69% in 2005. It's since declined. Right now, the rate of home ownership in the United States is at a 40-year low, and it continues to drop. We're seeing the opposite happening in Tompkins County. Home ownership is rising here. So thank you for that.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else want to speak on the public hearing for the Tompkins County Home Ownership Program number 10? Not seeing anyone, I will close the second public hearing as well. And let's open our regular meeting. Would you please stand with me and recite the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May we have the roll call, please?
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
14 members present?
We have quorum. We have a proclamation tonight, but Legislator Kiefer tells me we're expecting someone to come to accept it, so I'll delay that for now. We are going to have an executive session tonight after the meeting to discuss particular personnel and possibly contract negotiations. And I will do that at the end of the meeting, of course. Let's go to the privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity that the public has as our guests to speak to us about any subject for up to 3 minutes. We ask anyone who would like to speak on privilege of the floor to please sign one of the blue cards in the back And then pass it up to us. I have two at this point, but that doesn't stop anyone else from passing one up. We have rules that we ask you to abide by. We have a three-minute time limit, which will be shown on the clock to my left on the wall. And you would have 3 minutes. At the end of that time, there would be an audible signal from the clock, and we'd ask you to conclude at that point. By coming to speak to us, you're agreeing to our rules. You're agreeing to the three-minute time limit. You're agreeing not to raise your voice. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. You're agreeing not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. You agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. Folks, you may notice a slight change. We added the sentence about not allowing transferring time to another person. That's on recommendation of the Government Operations Committee. The first person I have tonight on the blue card is Scott Noren. Welcome.
Welcome.
Please state your name and your municipality.
Scott Noren, and I'm in the town of Ithaca. So I basically came to talk about the minimum wage issue. People have proposed a countywide $15 an hour minimum wage. And as a business owner, healthcare provider, I have other things in my background. I'm an oral surgeon here locally. Just from a logical standpoint, and I've done a lot of reading on the subject, and I've made recommendations to other bodies before. I've looked at what they do in other countries and other municipalities, and I think, a lot of people get locked in on the one side or the other side, and I think there's actually sort of a medium ground that a lot of people don't talk about. So I am actually like probably Bernie Sanders for a minimum wage, a $15 minimum wage, even nationwide, but especially countywide. However, I differ in that I think that I'd like to suggest that you consider having a teenage exemption like they do, just for one example, like in New Zealand and Australia and some other countries, they do a teenage exemption. They actually do it by province, too, I think. The reason that is a plausible addition to a $15 minimum wage is that, just to give you an example, so I have an oral surgery practice. I have don't have a lot of employees, just a handful. But if I hired a 14-year-old or 15-year-old to come in and, vacuum the lobby and vacuum or do some things around, I think it's reasonable that if you had an exemption at, say, $10 an hour or $9 an hour or something like that built in, it would probably be more employer-friendly than if you just said it's $15 or nothing. It's my way or the highway kind of approach. I think it's a good stepping stone into having even higher adult minimum wages than $15 an hour at some point, and yet having jobs that maybe some adults don't really want or it's not critical for them to have that a teenager in high school or whatever can perform those jobs. So it's a suggestion. It does work in some other, like I said, municipalities in some other countries, and something to think about.
Thank you. Victor Tiffany.
This is on, yes. When I spoke to you 2 weeks ago, I extemporaneously included in my remarks the possible ban on substances for sale that have microbeads, saying that you'd be sued if you tried to ban something like that if treaties like the Trans-Pacific Partnership are passed by Congress. This isn't just some sort of hypothetical situation. Congress passed a color of origin labeling law, and the United States was sued under the NAFTA Investor State Dispute Settlement Tribunal. We lost that case, and to prevent a massive payoff, a corporate protection payoff, they repealed the law. So this isn't some sort of hypothetical situation. This has already happened, and it will happen more and more and more as these free trade agreements are passed, if they're passed. I want to just address one more feature. I've mentioned it before in the spring about these tribunals that really sticks in the craw. Foreign transnational corporations can sue governments, but governments can't use that same system of justice to sue the transnational corporations for any damage that they do, any harm that they cause. What kind of justice system is it that functions like that? Now, before I left the House to come down here, I sent you all a link to the 14 characteristics of fascism, because the ninth characteristic talks about fascists protecting corporate power, protecting corporate power. But what these free trade agreements would do, they'd serve as a Trojan horse for the imposition of corporate power. They're the ones who wrote these rules. We talk about corporate crafted rules and regulations. They wrote the language. Not all of it, not the whole thing, but good parts and pieces of it were crafted by representatives of transnational corporations. I'm trying to wrap my head around what kind of legislator would want to support this kind of fascistic system. I'm not pointing my finger at any president or any legislator and saying, oh, you're a fascist or she's a fascist or anything like that. I'm talking about the system is fascistic in that it's fascism on steroids. It doesn't protect corporate power. It imposes. They will impose power on you. We don't have power. We have rights. You're the ones with the power, and you're the ones who are going to lose this power if these treaties are actually passed through Congress. So I'll see you in a couple of weeks, and we'll finish this up. Thank you. Victor Tiffany, I'm from Danby. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? That's the last card I have. We'll move to privilege of the floor for municipal officials. I know we have with us tonight Rod Howe from the town board of the town of Ithaca, who wants to speak a little bit. Welcome, Councilman Howe.
Good evening. So welcome from the town of Ithaca. We're going to try to do a better job of having a town board member here on an occasional basis to give you some brief updates. So there's just three or four sort of disjointed things that I'm just providing a sentence or two about. One is that the town is very interested in changing our image for economic development. We have a new economic development committee. I say new. It's been around for about a year and a half. Our initial focus is on the Inlet Valley. As you can imagine yourself driving into the city through the town on Route 13, it's kind of a hodgepodge. There's some opportunities, I think, to enhance agriculture opportunities, tourism opportunities there. So we're waiting to hear about an application we put in through the CFA, through the Regional Economic Development Councils, to do a feasibility study for that Inlet Valley area. So stay tuned on that. We've had meetings with folks from county planning, from TCAD, from the chamber. So we're circling around to think about who some of our resource folks are. The town is very interested in the court reform effort of TCOG, led by Joe Mariani. The town gets to keep only one-third of the revenue generated by the courts, and the rest goes to New York State. So we're excited that this dialogue is happening. One of the conversations we're having right now is about a new DCE regulation, another unfunded mandate, which forces towns to take over pumped sewer systems for developers after only 5 years. So before we approve some new projects, we're having to step back and think about what the cost ramifications are for this. So this could impede development in certain areas of the town if we do not want to permit such systems. So stay tuned on that as we sort through that new DEC regulation. I think you all know we have a change in leadership. We're saying goodbye to Herb Engman. Bill Goodman will start as supervisor in January, and we have a new town board member, Pam Blywis, who will also start in January. And as I said, our goal is to just give such brief updates on a more regular basis. So that's it, unless you have any questions for me.
Martha Robertson has a question.
Thank you, Rod. Could you just repeat that about the about the sewage pumping?
Sure. So if so, say we approve a subdivision and the gravity situation requires them to pump the sewage up, the town has to agree to take over that from the developer after 5 years. So we would want to make sure that it meets all of the pipes meet our criteria, but it's also a cost to maintain these pumping systems. It turns out we already have, I forget the exact number, but 10 or 11 around the town. Some were approved several years ago, and there's extra costs associated with that.
You're saying that's new, a new?
Apparently this is a new DEC regulation.
That would be an unfunded mandate, right?
Right.
I mean, that's... Wow.
Don't ask me too much more than that, but that's the situation. And right now there's a proposed development that it impacts, so we're working with the developer on that issue.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be a real gift to the developer. I mean, why not? Gee, that's great. I'm going to build a system, and you have to, taxpayers have to pay for it after 5 years.
No, it's only well, that's why we're being careful about what we say yes to, so that we're not taking on things that are going to put us in a corner financially down the road.
Which is also a problem because we need housing to be built.
Right. So anyway, we wanted, if you weren't aware of that, we wanted you to be aware of that.
Thank you, Ron.
Peter Stein.
So how was this done before this rule was written? I mean, there must have been other examples of water that was above grade level instead of below it.
So pumping stations were allowed. I mean, we, you know, the town manages some now. But if you want to go into this in more depth, you should probably ask one of our planning staff or whatever to come into, because I won't be able to answer deeper questions than just that we know it's an issue right now.
Okay.
Anything else?
Thank you very
okay.
much for coming.
Thank you.
We appreciate hearing
okay.
from your town and about things.
I'll let folks know to keep coming. Okay.
And we hope our legislators are attending your meetings from time to time. Privilege the floor for legislators. Anyone want to speak tonight? Jim Dennis.
Thank you. It occurred to me when I heard Paul Mazzarella talking about the things that they're doing in their operation that I recently heard that some of their things that they're trying to do is not going to happen in the East Ithaca area. And it also occurs to me that we're in the month of December, and we're looking ahead to 2016 and beyond. And one legislator thinks, and maybe other people agree, that housing is the single biggest issue we have facing us moving forward. The community is adept at using the word sprawl as a negative, and we talk about things happening outside the city of Ithaca, and that sprawl. I think what we would indulge ourselves to think about doing housing sprawl outside of the city of Ithaca. We definitely need houses. We need single family houses. We need low and mod houses, places to live. Paul gave us an amazing number, what the median price of a house sale is. And I think the effort of the county legislature and the economic development side and all sides should be looking at housing as we move into 2016 to see what we can do about this, because we know there's a shortage and we'll probably never catch up, but we have to try, and we have to try harder to do that over the next couple of years.
Anyone else? Dooley Kiefer.
You all, I'm sure, are aware of the COP meeting in Paris, the Conference of Parties, which will deal with another stage of international agreements about climate change and what to do. The summary that I heard on the radio this morning about what the parties have arrived with in hand by way of what their individual nations plan to do don't add up to what we need and would result in future warming of anywhere from 2.7 to 3.9 degrees, which is way beyond the 2 degrees centigrade that the groups had set for themselves, which is already too high for any low-lying nations that exist. And I remembered a statement that Einstein had said about war and peace. He said, "You can't simultaneously prepare for war and prevent war." And it made me think of the climate situation. You can't keep using fossil fuels and prevent global warming. That's my comment for tonight.
Thank you, Dooley. Anyone else? Carol Chalk.
Yeah. On the living wage, minimum wage item, I see that in our folders or our mailboxes, we got something mail from the Tompkins County Democratic Committee, and I just wonder if that could be included in the record along with any other input that we've gotten on minimum wage, living wage issue at this point, since we have a resolution on the agenda tonight. I was also going to talk about the climate conference just very briefly. Some of you may remember, let me say about the climate conference, that it's discouraging to see all the articles that now are warning us that the bar is being set very low, that the best case scenario coming out of Paris is only going to be do about half of what needs to be done at best case. So that's discouraging, but it's encouraging that that international attention has been brought to this issue and that it does look like they're pretty more determined than in the past to do something. Some of us may remember that the New York State organization that Martha helped organize, Dominic Frangillo, former board member in Caroline, still involved with, elected officials to protect New York, in which an effort was made, and in the end, over 800 public officials from throughout New York State, bipartisan, signed letters related to the environment around the fracking discussion, and have continued to weigh in on some issues very judiciously with the use of people's signatures and offer opportunities to sign on. And some of us heard directly from Dominic this morning on a phone call with the steering committee of EOPNY. I don't know, Martha, if you were planning to talk about this, because Martha was on the call as well. And it was kind of fun to hear directly. Dominic was calling us from Paris, where he was quite excited to actually be there and be part and give a rundown of the what it was like there and the international effort. But there's a group of people there who have gotten together from various states across the United States who want to use the EOPNY, Elected Officials to Protect New York, model of coming up with a joint letter to create an Elected Officials to Protect America. So there'll be email coming out to anybody who's already on that email list. You'll get it automatically in the next few weeks. They want to make an announcement in the next few weeks. Anybody who would like to be added to that email list, I think you go to, do you remember the website offhand, Martha? Elected Officials.
NYElectedOfficials.org.
NYElectedOfficials.org, or send an email to me, and I'll make sure you get on the list. It's an individual sign-on. We're not going to bring a resolution here at this point, but at some point we might. So it's an opportunity to sign on, and then they'll be getting people from across the country to do something similar related to the climate. So I wanted people to know about that.
Thanks. Martha Robertson.
Yeah, just to add on, that is, they want to have a press conference next Tuesday, I believe, in Paris, so they want to have as many names as possible. So I was just trying to check and see if it had come yet. So we'll forward it to everybody here. I realize there are
quite a few legislators who weren't legislators when we did that letter. So I was part of a climate march in Watkins Glen on Sunday. You know, a lot of, there were the number was something like around the world 750,000 people they expected in 350 marches or so, and I we had 350 people in Watkins Glen. It was great. Bob Howard spoke, Sandra Steingraber, Barbara Lifton, and myself, and a couple others. So it was good to see folks sort of, you know, stepping up locally and paying attention to the international meetings. I also just wanted to make a comment about Colorado Springs. I take something like that shooting actually very personally. I used to work at Planned Parenthood here, and I know what people put into that work. I know what they do every day to try to give women the health care that they need. And we know that a police officer who Carrie actually knows because he was a figure skater, was shot, was killed. Two people, an Iraq veteran and a young mother, were killed waiting for friends of theirs, supporting friends of theirs. And this is, you know, plus I think 9 other people were injured. This is in exercising women's constitutional right to get health care. They are exercising their rights. And they take their lives in their hands in this country. And I know Planned Parenthood, the National Planned Parenthood, is being very careful about what they say and what dots they connect on this, because the suspect will be, you know, prosecuted, and you don't want to ruin, you know, you don't want to prejudice the defense, the trial, et cetera. But I just have to say, I think when people manipulate videos, when people create, you know, when people tell lies, even in Republican debates, you know, in front of the country, say things that are absolutely false. And when they are challenged, they say, hey, I heard it somewhere. And you victimize and demonize the people who are getting health care and exercising their rights. This is what happens. And I am very angry about it, and it has to stop.
Mike Siegler.
Pass, Michael.
Recognize myself. Every year, our legislature reorganizes, and that will happen again in January when we have the organizational meeting. Setting the date for that is on the agenda tonight. And I think it's really important that we do that every year. It's unlike most other legislatures, which elect their leadership at the beginning of the term, whether it's a 4-year or a 2-year term. But yet we reorganize every year. And that gives us a chance to change committees, committee structure. It gives us a chance to have new committee chairs, new people on different committees. And I think that's healthy. I think it's educational for us. I think it makes us better legislators to do that. I have spoken over several years, about this time every year, about the process for nominating and electing people for the chair and vice chair. And I simply want to say that I think it should be done. Announcements of people interested should be making their announcements publicly. Whether anybody else wants to or not, I just want to say that I would be interested in serving as chair again next year, but that, of course, is up to this body. Is there anyone else who would like to speak? All right, let's move on. Dooley, I'm not seeing the person you thought was going to come for the proclamation, so I'm going to read just the first whereas and the resolve. It's pretty long. Do you really want it read out, Dooley?
Maybe you'd like to present it to Ed Marks.
Well, either I was going to give it to you, but I'll be glad to give it to.
There he is.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was somebody else coming. I misunderstood. He is here. Come on up. I'm going to read a proclamation. We have Ken Schlauder from Cornell Cooperative Extension. And I'll come over there in a second. Whereas the first World Soil Charter was conceived and formulated, negotiated, and adopted by the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization and member countries in 1981, and whereas the challenges faced by the world have become more evident and severe in the intervening three decades, and whereas new issues such as soil pollution and its consequences for the environment, climate change, adaptation and mitigation, and urban sprawl impacts on soil availability and functions are by now better understood scientifically, and whereas soils are a limited natural resource unequally divided between nations and people, quote, they provide fertilizer for growing food, store and filter water, host rich ecosystems, include many little-known species, provide resources such as peat, sand, clay, and gravel, and hold our cultural and historical memory and archaeological artifacts. The ground beneath our feet is a public good and service, unquote. And whereas 2015 has been declared the International Year of Soils by the 68th UN General Assembly, which took this action to provide a platform to raise awareness of the importance of soils for food security and essential ecosystem functions, as well as poverty alleviation and sustainable development. And whereas most soils are in private ownership, making it tricky to implement binding international agreements, and whereas decision makers at all levels must be sensitized about the need for robust investment in sustainable soil management activities, aiming at healthy soils for different land users and population groups, and whereas locally, Tompkins County benefits from having, among other things, a soil and water conservation district, a robust local Cornell Cooperative Extension Group, an agricultural farm and farmland and protection board, many organic farmers and locavores, and a county planning department protective of soil resources. Now, therefore, I, Michael Lane, chair of the county legislature, do hereby proclaim World Soil Day in Tompkins County and encourage all residents and visitors to recall the 1930s Dust Bowl that led to the first Soil Conservation Act in the U.S. and to recognize that in a world with both growing populations and increasing food and water scarcity, we all must care for our soil. And that, I think, is an important remembrance for all of us about the importance of our soils all across Tompkins County and the world. I'd like to give this to Ken Schlauder.
Mayor.
Some of you may not know that I'm actually a soil scientist, and I did my PhD research in Costa Rica on comparing nutrient cycling systems in Native American tropical soils, Native American bean systems, and Native forest systems, primary and secondary forest. And guess what? The Native American cropping systems were actually more effective and more efficient at cycling nutrients than were native forests in central in Costa Rica. I also actually worked for FAO for just before I came here, and worked in 20 countries around the world in soil science, looking at soils around the world. So this actually was really surprising. In fact, I had just been talking with somebody earlier about my work outside the U.S. before I fell in love with cooperative extension, because my first love was soils, and my second love is cooperative extension. I did want to, just three things I wanted to say, three short things, basically. One is that here in Tompkins County, in upstate New York in general, the Native Americans here actually farmed with Three Sisters and yielded higher per acre yields in their fields than did any farmers up until after World War II. And they did it because they paid careful attention to the resources that they were working with. They paid attention to rainfall. They paid attention to basically nature. And they used the best soils in the county. Now, we can actually see the best. This is something most of you probably don't know. You can tell the best soils in the county if you drive around and look at the farmhouses. And you'll see that the biggest, the old farmhouses, the biggest and the best, finest old farmhouses are located on the soils that are the best soils in the county. And the third thing is that every time you drive down Route 13 after a storm and you look out in the lake, you see what we're doing. And if it is such a resource that we're working, that we're supposed to be saving, we ourselves need to pay a little bit better attention to those actual, those natural things around us. And we're going to have to do more of it because of climate change. And by the way, one of the things I don't think was mentioned in the proclamation is that soils also sequester carbon. So in fact, they're one of our best hopes for climate change reduction, emissions reductions as well. Thank you very much. I hope you all pay as much attention to soils as the rest of us do, and they are there everywhere we go. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mike?
Yes, Martha.
I could just, I read a book called The Worst Hard Time by Timothy Egan about the Dust Bowl and about, I mean, it's completely human made. I mean, and you know, unbelievable stories of these clouds of dust that started in the West and ended up in Washington, D.C., ended up in New York City. And it's something that everybody should read to really, and that was the creation of the soil district, which became the soil and water districts. And thank you, Ken, for bringing this to us.
On the chair's report tonight, the only thing I want to mention is that I attended a press conference yesterday, and Legislator John was there, Legislator Martha Robertson was there, and I think those are the three of us were there. It was United States Senator Kristen Gillibrand, and she was, of all places, in the town of Dryden in Freeville area at the Incotema plant, which is now in the former Wernix facility over there. And we had a tour and got to see some of their giant 3D printers in action, just going along making parts, and the people in the control booth there making sure they were doing what they were supposed to do. Senator Gillibrand was there to announce her introduction of an initiative through the Small Business Administration to provide more funding for operation and startup of businesses like Incotema. And we were glad she came to Tompkins County, and hope that she and Senator Schumer and our congressman come frequently. I don't have any chair's appointments tonight. Let's go to reports. Our county administrator, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Mike. I think I'm just going to stick to one item tonight, and it's very brief, too. I wanted to update you on Energize New York. We've talked about that many times now, so you're up to speed on what the program is. But today was an important milestone day. It was a meeting between Energize New York officials and technicians and a contracting community who's been NYSERDA certified, so can do some of the improvements that can be financed through Energize New York. Somewhere between 15 and 20 contractors came to this event. It's the beginning of an education and outreach process that will continue next month. So early next month, on January 7th, we haven't locked down the venue yet, but on January 7th at 5:30, it'll be the official kickoff of Energize, and a number of people in this community will be invited. Ken Slaughter is going to be helping to get word to the agricultural community and others who he has a network into, the Chamber of Commerce, TCAD. I'm hoping the Landlords Association will help kind of get the word out to individuals who may ultimately become users of this new financing system that this legislature has approved for Tompkins County, which sets us apart from many others and will allow long-term, reasonable interest rate financing for energy-related improvements. So if you'll stay tuned to your calendars and pencil off January 7th to be a part of that kickoff event, I think that'll be, again, the second important milestone. And then it's roll up our sleeves and get to work. And, again, I'm really pleased with where we are with this. I think the legislature is going to be very proud of what it and the city council have approved in terms of giving a resource to this community that will do the two things that we have said we would like to do most. One is to make environmental improvements, and two is to grow the economy. And this program nicely combines those two things. So please stay tuned for January 7th for a kickoff event, and you'll be getting something in the mail on that. That's really my report tonight.
Questions? I think I have Will first and then Mark.
Joe, in any sense of the time frame? I know you don't know necessarily when exactly, but morning, afternoon.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, it'll be 5:30 p.m. Yep.
Martha?
Before this meeting, you said December 7th.
Did I? Yeah. I meant January 7th.
In January, okay.
January 7th.
Then never mind what I said about being right after economic development, okay? Okay.
January 7th.
Okay, Joe, we thank you. Let's move next to our county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
I have no report.
Was that no report?
It was no report. I'm not sure the mic is working. Yeah, there it is.
There are things going on in your office, though, right?
A few things.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for John? Go to Finance Director Rick Snyder.
I'd just like to bring to you our sales tax report for October, which is in your red folder. You haven't seen it yet. Also want to welcome legislators Kellis and John. Since I was not here the last meeting in which you were at, I want to say welcome here to our legislature, and I look forward to working with you in the future. In October sales tax presentation tonight, we're looking at 10 months through the year. For the benefit of those who weren't here during the first few months, I'd like to remind all the legislators that our first 3 or 4 months into this fiscal year were fairly dismal. We did not achieve our projections. There was a downturn in most of the economy, and that was reflected here in Ithaca and Tompkins County also. So our first 3 or 4 months, our sales tax receipts were down compared to the previous year, and they were also down compared to our budgeting forecast. But then in the next 3 or 4 months, we had some very strong months through the middle third of the year or so. And during September and October, although it's leveled off a little bit, we still have a positive report for you tonight. If you're looking at this report for the first time, it's divided into four sections. The top section shows the countywide sales tax collections. That's looking at it as if you were adding the county portion, the city of Ithaca portion, and all the towns and municipalities together. All those receipts added together are reflected in the top portion of this particular spreadsheet. The next section is the one that we concentrate the most on, and it's that small section called the county section. It takes up just a couple of lines, followed by the third section, which is the city of Ithaca section, and then lastly at the bottom, the towns and villages. So if you focus on that second section called the county, I bring to your attention that if you look at the second column there under October 2015, and the percent change next to it, you can see that the distributions for October were up 0.51%, or about a half a percent, compared to last October. And if you go over to the right-hand year-to-date columns, it shows at the end of October year-to-date tax distributions for the county's portion total $27,323,317, compared to $27,591,017 in 2014. This represents a decrease of $267,700 year over year, or we're down 0.97%. So if you look at, if you were to look at last month's report and the month before that, that would be August and September, you would see that that year-over-year percent change has grown, has come down gradually from over 1%, around 1.3%, down to about 1.2%, 1.1%, and now we've just broken down underneath 1%. So we're just a little bit under 1% of where we were at last year. And the last thing I'll say is that we always look forward to November and December at the end of the year because those are our two strongest months, and that's coming right up. And that's all I have to report tonight.
Questions for Rick? Carol.
So, Rick, what happens to tax sales taxes from Internet purchases for those purchases that are subject to the sales tax, which is if the company has any in-state, as I understand it, has any in-state locations or does business in your state, then it automatically comes up that you have to pay that sales tax. Does that come to us with these same reports or separately? Is it worked in? Is there a lag time?
Those that report and pay off the Internet sales tax, not all companies are doing that right now, but a lot of the big ones do. If they have a location here that they and they are paying the sales tax, we do receive our portion of that. I'm not sure how that nexus or how that location point is fine-tuned so that we know what Tompkins County portion is, whether it's by address or how that's calculated by the state. But that is, the Internet sales are part of these receipts. I'm just not sure how they know who gets what.
Okay. I mean, it would be, as with the holiday shopping season coming up or in full swing, depending on your perspective, It would maybe be a good idea to understand that, sort of where that comes to us, because I'm reading a lot of articles about the higher percentage of purchases, especially for this holiday season, that are being made online.
Anything else? Thank you, Rick, for that report. And it's a little more encouraging than earlier in the year. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Jim Dennis.
Thank you. Yes, it is Resolution P, and it is changes in positions, various departments. And these are all positions that we were, that are in the 2016 budget. And I believe, if I'm anywhere near correct, Steve Estes in personnel is implementing the things necessary so that these positions can be done by a certain date. And I think if we waited till the 15th of January to do this, it would hinder what personnel has to do with these positions. And anybody, Joe, you can correct me anyway.
Is there a second to add that? I'm sorry, go ahead, Joe.
No, I think Jim explained it well.
Is there a second to add it to the agenda? Seconded by Martha. All in favor of adding, please raise your hand. Opposed? That's added.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Dooley Kiefer.
Yes. Withdraw Resolution F and withdraw the member-filed resolution at the tail end of the agenda.
Okay. They're withdrawn. Anyone else? Carol?
This is more of a question. I see in our packets we have a long listing of the fee structure for all the fees in the county. And I'm trying to remember, are we scheduled to talk about this tonight or will we have?
It's on consent agenda.
It's on the consent agenda. That is resolution. Oh, I see. Resolution A. I see.
Right.
Thank you.
Well, A is the budget. Okay. Jim?
Maybe this is the appropriate time for Dooley to say why F has been withdrawn.
I'll try. We also have the commissioner here who could say it probably better. But it, my understanding is that the RFP went out for the airport industrial park feasibility study, and there were no responses. It was reissued, and responses are due December 18th. But there's no way that a decision would be made on that within this calendar year. So it will get dealt with next year.
Okay. Thank you.
Did I get that right? Okay.
Thank you, Dooley, for that, answering that question. Anybody else? Okay. Let's go to the consent agenda. Anyone wants something talked about, just say off. For the first thing I have is some appointments. The advisory board appointments out of the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee to the Water Resources Council, Afe Benson, Darby Kiley, Marjorie Rinaldo Lee, John Anderson, R. Barry Goodrich, Joan Jerkowitz, and Frank Proto. To the Tompkins County Area Transit Board of Directors, Peter Stein. Out of Government Operations, to the Library Board of Trustees, Helena Maria Viramontes, Risa Mish, Peter McCracken, and Bruce Ryan. And to the Air Services Board, John Gutenberger. We have the resolutions. A, implementation of the 2016 budget departmental fees, ID 5975.
Off.
Off. B, implementation of 2016 Tompkins County budget memberships, ID 5973. Resolution C, authorizing a public hearing on Local Law E of 2015, which is repeal of Local Law Number 3 of 2015, a local law overriding tax levy limit for 2016. That's ID 5986. Out of the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution D, making a negative determination of environmental significance in relation to Resolution Number Blank of 2015, appropriating funds from the Capital Reserve Fund for Natural, Scenic, and Recreational Resource Protection for the acquisition of the Pinckney Road parcel. That's ID 5978. Resolution E, appropriating funds from the Capital Reserve account for natural, scenic, and recreational resource protection for the acquisition of the Pinckney Road parcel. That's ID number 5977. Out of Government Operations Committee, we have Resolution G, the date of the 2016 organizational meeting. That's ID 5990. Out of also Resolution H, correction of errors, ID 5991. And Resolution I, designation of newspaper, ID 5992. So is there a motion to approve the consent agenda? By Jim Dennis, seconded by Glenn Morey. Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed, that's unanimous. Okay, let's go to standing committees. We're moving right along tonight. Anybody here for anything special? No, I guess not. All right, we'll go to the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean-Claiborne is our chair.
First on the agenda this time.
Right. Top.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee met yesterday. We spent a good deal of our time talking about our reading and discussion program, which has been spearheaded by our Deputy County Administrator, Paula Younger. Has been a very successful program this year. We're in the second year of a two-year grant funding from the community, capacity building grant from the Community Foundation. So we're just getting ready for a report on that program and trying to encourage as many of our members of county government, employees, legislators, all of us to consider participating. We explored a number of topic areas that would be of interest. This past group, we had Irene Kehoe, I think it is, from the assessment department that represented the program very well and what has come out of it. And one of the things that we do recognize is the need for continued discussion and processing once the 4 weeks of the program, once those weeks are up. It seems like employees get so much out of it, at least this last group, which the topic was generational, sort of generational differences in a nutshell, that people really wanted to continue to talk more. We also felt, just even looking at that topic, that it meshed very well with some of the issues that were brought up in our climate survey. And so we're looking to see what are other areas that came out of the climate survey that we can explore further in more reading and discussion groups. So we do want to continue this and encourage as many people to participate as possible. So look for fresh, new ideas coming forward in how one can participate in these activities and further discussions. As we've always said at WDIC, it is another way of getting people involved in the discussions around inclusion and diversity without having everybody roll their eyes about, oh, not another diversity training. This is an excellent way to engage people in conversation. We also spent some time talking about our 2016 goals as a committee, the things we want to achieve or to see achieved within county government. Some of those included an enhanced employee recognition program, again, something that came out of our climate survey. Employees are proud to work for the county, but they are looking for more recognition and reward for the work they do. We talked about one of the goals many years ago when WDIC first started. The county had given out its first and only Strength and Diversity Award. And so we want to revive that award as part of our goal to make sure that we're continuing to recognizing the good work that people are doing throughout our county in terms of fostering inclusion. So that is one of the other goals we talked about as well, amongst others. Personnel shared with us, and we were very excited about that, their wall of wow and thinking of ways that we can expand that throughout the county, whether it is something that goes electronic, is that the word? Web-based, so that other employees can share wow moments, that others can know what's going on within county government, the good things that are happening, the kudos, the praises that people are getting, and get to know who the other employees are, because that is a very important area. We continue our work towards the achieving some of the recommendations that came out of the climate survey. So there's been a steering committee that has been meeting. We sort of continue to move those things forward. Communication is an issue that we've been dealing with, trying to put together a blueprint of how do we improve the communication within our county so that all employees feel like they are included and understanding and getting information. The county administrator did a survey of departments just asking, you know, what is the way that people receive information. And it was very informative to us. And so we're looking at all the ways to enhance how people receive information. It's interesting to hear about corridors going completely on the web when there's so many people even thinking of not everybody goes to the web to read things, and sometimes just sitting in a break room and having a single copy of a newsletter goes a long way for some people. So we're trying to find where is the balance and what are all the ways that we can set out so that people can get the information that is needed. Focus groups, which was a recommendation coming out of the climate survey and out of the work that we all did as legislators and department heads, Paula has been working feverishly in assembling stellar group of facilitators for the focus group, people who understand county government, understand the work that we do, but also have base knowledge in diversity and inclusion issues. And so we have a group of about five or six facilitators who have been meeting and planning the design of the focus group so that we are ready to go. And those, I think, will be rolled out somewhere between February and April of next year so that we're, you know, good to go. Those are some of the things we talked about at WDIC. As I said, our goals were the main things we focused on in our committee for 2016 and going forward. There are a number of things we want to achieve in 2016. So that's my report.
Thank you, Leslyn. Questions?
Let me just add very quickly that we're scheduled to meet December 23rd. I thought it was the 24th, and I was trying to be cruel and say, yes, we are meeting. But we will play by ear if the 23rd, if we will meet on that date, depending on, you know, the strength of the agenda.
Leslyn, I did have a question myself. We've talked in the past about outreach to try to help folks with civil service examinations, preparation for that. Has your committee been talking about that with the personnel committee?
We have over the years, and we've been involved in great outreach efforts. We share the personnel department who's represented on WDIC about those efforts that were joint between county and city and just how successful they were. And so we're looking at personnel is again picking this up, and at our committee we talked about recruitment and relationship building because we believe that the second half of that, the latter part of that, is where we sort of drop the ball. We reach far and wide, but we don't follow up in terms of building relationships so that we attract more candidates to the exam room. We attract a lot of people filling out an application but not getting them to the exams, and so we need to do a little bit more work there. So we did talk some about that, and we'll continue to work with personnel in developing the plan of action to make sure that that is much more effective, and perhaps we will again collaborate with the city and others to be more effective in our recruitment and relationship building. So we are working on that. It's one of our goals as well.
Really pleased to hear that. As I remember from the climate survey, people being frustrated with the civil service process, and anything we can do to help people prepare for those kinds of tests and be competitive in the selection process, I think is a real good effort on our part.
Yes, so we it's on our radar as a priority.
Great. I'm going to go ahead and move up Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee because we've got a resolution. I see Ed Marks is still here. Julie, could you take your committee report, please?
Yes. Well, I'll take the resolutions first.
All right.
Resolution L, appropriation from the general fund balance for the relocation of New York State Department of Transportation Maintenance Facility Feasibility Study, and the version is as adopted by Budget, Capital, and Personnel, ID 5976, and I move it.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion. Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Oh, I'm sorry. It takes a short form roll call. Good thing I've got Kathy Covert on my left, on my right.
Mr. Moore.
Left, I'm sorry.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Are there any legislators who wish to be recorded as a no? That's unanimous.
Do you want me to give a very short report?
Go ahead.
We met the Planning Energy and Environmental Quality Committee met this afternoon. We acted on a few advisory board resolutions which will come to the next legislative meeting. And our next peak meeting is after that next legislative meeting. It's on December 16th. We had contemplated having someone from DEC attend that meeting, but we're going to take the time instead to, as a committee, discuss what we'd like to get from DEC, what questions we have, which representative or plural representatives from DEC would be most useful for us to talk to. So we will delay having DEC reps at a peak meeting until January. And that's the end of my report.
Any questions for Dooley? Carol?
Yeah, so we have such a long agenda here, just page-wise. And when people get to their resolutions, when they're out of order, if they just give us the page number so we could get there before we vote. I just wanted to – we already voted on the Pinckney Road Capital Reserve Fund for Natural, Scenic, and Recreational Resource Protection. And I just wanted to take the opportunity to point out the documents are kind of buried on pages, packet pages 47, 48, maybe it goes on to 49. It's actually from the town of Dryden, and it's this really nice outline of their methods and selection criteria for land protection and acquisition for this type of program. And so if you ever wondered what it is that gets property into this and you're not on the Peak Committee, this is a good summary right here in our packets of what are the kinds of things that we're looking to protect. So that's, I just want to appreciate the town of Dryden or the planning department if you made this list or whoever made this list. Thank you.
Thanks, Carol. Anyone else? Okay, let's go back up. Let's take Health and Human Services Committee. Peter Stein is the chair.
Thanks, Mike. We haven't met since the last since I last reported. So let me just give the resolution. There's a resolution. That's resolution J, number 5952. A budget adjustment to transfer funds from fund balance to the mandated medical examiner program for increased professional service costs. And that sounds pretty straightforward, so I'd like to move that.
For a second, seconded by Anna Kellis. Discussion. Dooley?
Well, I won't have the information in time for this resolution, but I'd like to ask that you acquire from the medical examiner how expensive this has been over the last 10 years instead of just the last 2 years. And just get that information for us, please.
Okay.
Are we ready to vote? Those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. Oh, again, I got a short roll call.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous.
And I'll also report that our next meeting will take place in 2 days at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That's all.
Okay.
I have to report.
Thank you, Peter. Let's go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. David McKenna is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. F&I has not met since our last meeting. The next meeting of F&I will be in these chambers at 3:30 on the 14th of this month. That's my report.
Questions for David? Are we all asleep tonight? We're just so kind to each other.
I think Carrie's here. We don't want to show off.
Maybe it's because it's kind of a dreary day today. But we can kind of get pumped up here. All right, Dave, thank you very much. Let's go to Economic Development Committee. Martha Robertson is our chair.
I'll see what I can do. We have not met since we're going to meet next week. So we haven't met since the last legislature meeting. We had some tourism things on here. We have tourism items on next Monday's agenda, quite a few. One that'll be of interest is a local law about what the word hotel means. This has to do with our room tax law and a couple of issues that have come up lately. And so if you're interested in that item, check the packet. It's in our packet, and which is you at least have gotten an email about it with the proposed language change in there. We're also going to be meeting Steve Mesmer, who is the coordinator of the Small Business Development Center. He's now assigned about 20 hours a week, half-time, to help folks in Tompkins County. He's working through the chamber and I think also with TCAD. So I was very happy he's going to be able to come to our meeting and tell us what he does to help small businesses in Tompkins County. And we are going to hear from Joe some a little bit more about Energize New York. So those are the main items on next week's agenda. I will say we're also kind of all waiting to hear about the consolidated funding application awards and the Upstate Revitalization Initiative, and December 10th is supposed to be the announcement of those awards in Albany. So stay tuned.
That's the Hunger Games.
The Hunger Games, that's right.
Thank you. Questions for Martha? All right, let's move on. Government Operations Committee, Dan Klein is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We met on November 24th. We have a very big agenda. We heard a presentation from the Indian Creek Neighborhood Association about the Biggs parcel. The county has expressed interest in selling the Biggs parcel, and the Indian Creek Neighborhood Association was asked what role they might see for themselves in the future of that property. So they gave us a presentation that mostly centered around asking for more environmental review and also basically seeking for it not to be developed. They did not talk about who might own it or what money might be involved in that transaction. So we may be voting on this in December or possibly January. We also had a presentation by the Academy of Model Aeronautics regarding the draft drone law, how it might affect their hobby, and then also they had some recommendations for us about changes they might like to see in the draft law. We've been talking about this for a number of months, so I'm expecting that we'll be voting on this in December and moving on. We took our first look at the library's bylaws. There are a lot of details involved in this, and some work's going to be done between meetings, and maybe we'll be looking at it again in December. We also heard from the library about their proposed plans for the space that's been vacated by the Finger Lakes Library System. And it's really exciting stuff, and I urge you guys to look into it if you have not already seen it or heard about it. And Susan Curry, the director of the library, has invited anybody that would like. She'd be happy to give them a tour of that space and paint a picture for you of what she hopes that it will look like. Our next meeting is Tuesday, December 22nd. It's at 3 o'clock, which is our new start time. We've moved it up from 3:30 to 3. And that'll be right here in this room. And that is my report.
Questions? Will.
And the library's bylaws, this is the library board?
That's correct, the library board of directors.
And any things that scream out in terms of significant changes, or is it just a periodic revision?
There's nothing in there that sounded any alarms for me, and it is just a periodic check-in.
Okay, thank you.
Carol?
So that means we set the library's bylaws?
We approve the library's bylaws.
Approve them. Okay, thanks.
Julie?
Is there any chance we're going to get a demonstration of drones?
a bylaw?
Drones. Julie had asked for a presentation last time, so before the meeting, I had talked to the Academy of Model Aeronautics about possibly doing a demonstration in DeWitt Park. They said that there's not enough room there for takeoffs and landings and not enough open space. I have had two individuals contact me. They've seen publicity in various media about drones and have offered demonstrations to anybody that would like it. So if there is somebody that would like that, let me know, and I will put you in touch with these two different people, and you can make your own arrangement.
Yes, please.
I've got Jim and then Carol.
Yeah. If anyone wants to see the magnificent photography done with drones, they should go online and take a look at the Cornell University show that they did for the pre-inauguration of the new president. It was an amazing look at the university with the use of a very small drone.
Carol?
There was a camera drone on Saturday night of Grassroots Festival this year I guess, taking pictures of the crowd and the stage. And it was fascinating to watch this. It was at night, up in the air, and it flew. I mean, had a hard time figuring out what was this thing that was flying around, kind of circling the crowd, going way up high, and then very quickly zooming down in. At one point, it hovered onto the stage above the band and came back out. It was fascinating to watch what this can do in the hands of an expert, and scary to contemplate what could happen if that person's hand slipped on the controls. So but that's not what I raised my hand about. I raised my hand with a question. We passed Resolution H, which has to do with the manifest error and enabling our staff to correct manifest errors. And I thought, partly because we have new people and partly because it's just a good review for all of us, if somebody could give us, if Kathy or Jonathan, whoever's the right person, could give us just a rundown again of what constitutes a manifest error where we can just give a change to the staff in the minutes or other things, and what is a content error that we need to bring to the committee or to everybody.
Kathy can speak to that.
Well, I consider a manifest error to be an error that is obvious. It's an incorrect date in a resolution or the minutes, a vote that maybe was inaccurately recorded. So,
name spelling.
Yes. Grammar errors.
What?
Thank you.
I've got Martha, then Anna.
I'll pass.
Oh, and then Peter.
Just a quick question on when the expectation, maybe you've said this, so the expectation of the vote on the drones, was that December or January? Is that what you had said?
I'm hoping it'll be next month. Well, this month, I guess, is December. Sorry about that.
Yeah. December
this month, 22nd. It's 22nd, yep. We've been talking about it for a lot of months, and I think it's time to finally make a decision.
You mean in the committee, right?
In committee,
yep.
December 22nd.
Peter?
I have a question from my colleague here, my left. When I was a child, that was a long time ago, I used to make model airplanes. It had a rubber thing to do the propeller, and you'd throw them up, and the propeller would go, and then they'd crash down. But there were some rich kids where I lived that had airplanes, model airplanes, and they had a radio control to the model airplane, and they could fly the model airplane. Is that a drone? Is it the same thing, or is there something fundamentally different? Not about the planes I had, but the ones that the rich kids had.
So, as currently written, the law would apply to both. They are unmanned aerial vehicles. They have motors in them, and they're in the air. We are considering a measure that would define a difference between the two. That was something that this presentation showed us, that there was another way to think about it. The Academy of Model Aeronautics said and suggested a change that would differentiate between model airplanes and drones. Does that answer your question?
What's the difference? What's the differentiation, just roughly? They're bigger and
David, you'd be interested in taking a crack at this? You're a member of the club?
Sure. Peter, basically, the radio control plane is basically a plane, you know, with a radio and a motor in it. Looks like an airplane, like conventional airplane. A drone, for all intents and purposes, is one of these new multi-copters that has 4, 6, or 8 motors on it and will carry a camera. They have the ability to hover in place and maneuver, as we were talking about, as Carol was talking about. And, again, in the hands of somebody who knows what they're doing, they can be quite effective.
Okay, thank you very much. That clarifies it. Thanks.
Okay, Dan, I think you have a resolution, Resolution K.
I do. Thank you. I'd like to move Resolution K, resolution calling on Governor Cuomo and the New York State Legislature to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour statewide.
Is there a second? Seconded by Will Burbank. Discussion. Go ahead, Dan.
Thank you. So I'm mostly going to let the resolution speak for itself, although I'm sure a lot of other people are going to be speaking. There are two little things I wanted to say, though. One is that I just want to be clear that this is a different idea than there are two ideas being discussed in Tompkins County. One you heard one of the members of the public speak about earlier, which is an idea to set a minimum wage just within Tompkins County. That is not what this resolution is about. This resolution is about supporting the idea of a statewide $15 an hour minimum wage to be phased in over a number of years, 6 years. The other thing I wanted to say is that, as far as I know, we are the first municipality in the state to be doing it. So if we pass it tonight, I think we should be proud of that.
Discussion. Martha Roberts.
I appreciate you doing this, and I will support it. I would like to ask that I hope it's just a friendly addition can be added to line 23, the word financial, so that it would say that we ask Cuomo and the legislature to also increase financial assistance to county governments.
That's friendly to me.
Friendly to the second or friendly to Will, so that's added. Anyone else want to speak to this? Mike Sigler.
I mean, I'm pretty sure this is going to pass tonight, but I figured I would bring up the negatives on passing something like this. I was speaking at an event about this, and it just seems to me that the thing that's always lost in this debate is that this is, to me, a play to big business, and it's a play to corporatism, and I know you don't see it that way. But if you were to pass this locally, I'm thinking, who's going to benefit the most? You know, Walmart, they'll be able to absorb this. They're going to be able to shift it out to whoever. They'll be able to cut their staff. They have a pretty big staff. They can cut 10% of the people so that they can pay the rest of those people that money. It seems to me the people that are going to be hit are the small guys. So I'm just putting that out there for you, that you should be comfortable with the idea that a lot of your small businesses, your small restaurants, are going to go out. And the guys that are going to survive are going to be your Walmarts and your Targets, and your everything is going to be big. You aren't going to have a local pizza parlor anymore. You're going to have a Papa John's. You know, every business will just, you're going to need an economy of scale. So just putting that out there for you, I know you don't look at it that way, but that's certainly how I see it. Then I'm looking at some of the people that get paid minimum wage or get paid around that area. And I'm looking at, like, the teacher's aides. And I'm looking at, well, we talk about child care, like, every day on this legislature. It is, like, the number one issue beyond rent is how to pay for child care. And those people, I hate to tell you, aren't getting paid $15 an hour. So I don't know how you fix that. What you're basically going to do is you're going to raise people's salaries to $15 an hour, people that need the child care. But they're not going to be able to afford the child care anymore because all those people are going to be making $15 an hour. And I don't know how to fix that. I don't think that this fixes that. So now you've got people who have lost their jobs because these businesses had to cut back. They can't get child care because those costs are higher. Those are just some of the two of the problems that I see. Plus the fact that your school aides, there are a lot of school aides. And there are certain reasons people take those jobs beyond, oh, wow, I'm going to make $15 an hour. The aides I know, they like the schedule. They have kids in the school. They like to work that schedule because then, hey, I can meet my kid after school. Or, hey, Lansing, we give them health care. Not give them. They earn the health care, but they get health care opportunities. So that is part of the reason they work there. And it's not so much for the wage because they understand, hey, I'm working 180 days a year. I get the same days off that my kids get off, and my family gets health care. You put those three things together, and that's pretty good. That's actually more important than the wage that pays for groceries to them. The last thing I want to say is, I mean, I'm actually talked to people. You know, people always look at some of these companies as being big. Like the McDonald's is big, you know, big national corporation, or Arby's, they're a big national corporation. They're not. I mean, most of these things are franchises. We just saw Tim Hortons close. This wasn't Tim Hortons' big Canada company. This is Tim Hortons owned by your neighbor. And they couldn't make a go of it. So what I'm going to say to you here is the people I've talked to in the fast food industries, some of these are going to go out because of this. They can't accommodate. Or they're going to go down to the Danny Mini Mart down in Horseheads, New York, and go to some of the stores like that where they already have touch screens. And you go in, you don't talk to anybody, really. You can go in, you punch in what you want. That goes back to the kitchen. They bring the food out, and you pay the person at the checkout. And they're going to do away with the person at the checkout pretty soon, too, because you're not going to need that, just like you don't have them at Tops anymore. And you can go to other places where you can ring your own stuff up. The people that I talk to in the fast food industry, they have basically three types of workers. They've got the guy or the woman that's going to be there, and they are a restaurant person. They're going to work hard. They are going to go, and they will probably become the manager of that store in a year, and then they're going to go and probably own their own store one day. That's that one person. The other type is the student that Scott was talking about earlier, who really we're going to pay $15 an hour to somebody who really doesn't have to make that to support a family. They're in college or they're in high school. This is their first job. You know, Australia, everybody always uses them as an example. Well, the example in Australia is you don't pay them the minimum. You don't pay them $15 an hour. You pay them a lower scaled wage down. It's their first job. You know, these people, that's the other group of people. And the third group are, frankly, not that employable. I mean, these are people that need basic work skills. These are the people that come in, maybe they're coming off a drug habit, and they say, you know, this is their first job after that, and they're trying to make a go of their life. They're trying to stay clean, and they need this job. Or it's somebody that's, you know, had some other family issue, some major breakdown in their family, and this is their first job after that, and they're trying to get back on their feet. And the people I'm talking to are we going to hire people that we can't rely on like that? Why wouldn't we? Hell, if we're paying $15 an hour, there's going to be a lot more high school kids looking for jobs. There's going to be a lot more college kids looking for these jobs. I've talked to high school principals, and they're saying some of our kids are marginal as it is. They don't really want to be here in high school. If they can make $15 an hour at 16 years old, they're going to stick around? Why would they stick around? For a better future. They're looking at $15 an hour going, great. You know, I'm going to take that. So I know what's probably going to happen here. It's fine. It seems to me we always say, wow, that's a great idea, because it is a great idea. Everybody should make more money. We want people to make more money. We want people to make a living wage so that they can support their families. And who doesn't want that? But it seems like we never just go another couple steps down the road. We never go to the end of the stairs and say, okay, what is this going to look like? And frankly, it's going to have a lot of negative consequences that we just probably don't really think about. So that's my two cents. Thanks for listening.
Let me see hands again, please. Do you want to speak? I'm going to go around. Dooley, then Anna, then Leslin, Carol, Martha.
So, Mike, you make...
Miss Peter.
You make a good bunch of points. I don't disagree with what you've said. It's a very hard nut to crack. I would like to suggest that the resolution be amended to send to also the chairs of the relevant legislative committees. I don't know their names, but they're findable. I hope that would be friendly. I also, yes.
Is that
no,
friendly to the group?
Yes.
I also am looking at line 20, which says phased in by 2021. And it's my opinion that what's $15 seems like a lot of money now. By 2021, I don't think it's going to be so much money. So if you're going to pass this, I would also suggest to the governor that it be phased in by 2021 and earlier if possible. So that's an amendment I would offer.
Your amendment is to change, say again, please.
To change line 20 to be phased in by 2021 and earlier if or earlier if possible.
So you're adding the suffix there, basically, the or earlier if possible.
Yes.
Okay. Someone want to second that amendment? Seconded by Leslin. Discussion on the amendment. Carol?
Well, I was going to talk about my sense of the resolution first, and then also end with information about why that isn't soon enough. So I was going to offer something stronger than, I was going to say more quickly than 2021, preferably by 2018. And so I would amend.
Are you amending the amendment?
I'm amending the amendment.
So there's an amendment proposed to the amendment to change that to the date of 2018?
Well, I was, the way I worded it was phased in more quickly than 2021, preferably by 2018.
So the amendment to the amendment has been, there's a motion. Is there a second for the amendment to the amendment? Not seeing one, Carol. So we're back on the amendment as proposed by Dooley Kiefer. Anyone else want to speak? Jim Dennis, I have.
No, I don't, Mike. I am going to vote no. That's all.
Anyone else want to speak on the on Dooley's amendment? Carol?
So I do want to say the reason that I support it is, and having it happen more quickly, is that I don't think we need to look towards the future to see what happens when we go through periods of, what has it been, 7, 8 years without raising the minimum wage, and looking at periods and what has happened to the economy in years where we do have a minimum wage that's higher in proportion to the economy than the $8.75 an hour is now. And historically, the economy as a whole has done better when the minimum wage is higher than it is now, adjusted for inflation. And if you look at every period of history, as the economy has gone up and down, and there's a simple reason for that. The reason for that is that people who are working at the minimum wage or at wages at the low end of the scale spend their money at a much higher spend a much higher proportion of what they earn. They spend all of what they earn because they need to live, and they spend it locally in much greater numbers. They're not investing off in the distance. They're not able to purchase things that are way at a distance, those big ticket items that you order from afar. They're coming, they're going to the, you know, to the local grocery store. They're going to the Tim Hortons when they can, if they can afford to eat out. They're frequenting the businesses that then therefore can pay people better. And that's been historically true. So to do this with a 5-year lag time when it is so desperately needed now seems to me to be not quickly enough. So I certainly support Dooley's wording, and it's why I offered the stronger wording, and it's why I support the, you know, the whole thing.
All right. Anything else on the amendment? All right. Ready to vote on Dooley's amendment. All those in favor of it, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That fails. We're back on the main resolution. More discussion. I have Peter Stein next.
I just wanted to say a few words to my colleague, three persons down to the left. It's clear to me that economists cannot predict what the result of something like this is. You can make arguments on both sides, and but the reason that we have a minimum wage, I mean, why did FDR introduce the minimum wage at a time when people, there was unemployment all over the place? It was an expression of how this country feels about people who work. And if indeed there was a time, namely 100 years ago, 200 years ago, in this country of ours, when if you didn't have a job, or you couldn't find a job, you starved. That's all. Or maybe the local church that you belong to would help you get a bite of food. But there was no system for making sure that every American could eat and sleep at nighttime in safety. And that's what it was about. It was about a moral issue that says that every person who is willing to get out there and work 40 hours a week ought to be able to be married and have a child and maybe have a car and at the lowest end of what it's like to live in the United States. So I believe that's the basic issue. And I throw aside all of the predictions that people make because they sound good, no matter whether it's that it'll help or it'll hurt. But it does seem to me that it is important to have that. I mean, I think it's disgraceful how the ideas of Franklin Roosevelt in doing this, which actually at that point did succeed, did end up making it able to a person to get every person to get a job to be able to have a decent life. It's a disgrace how that has deteriorated over time. And as far as I'm concerned, that's why it's important to do.
Anna?
I too wanted to address some of the concerns that Mike raised. I appreciate recognizing the concerns and the challenges. I don't believe, though, that when something is hard, it's therefore the wrong thing to do. I think that it's hard and it's the right and just thing to do. But I think that you're right that we need to be very careful and recognize the challenges, and we have 6 years to do that and to minimize the risk of those challenges. So I think if we do pass this and the state does pass it, then we need to recognize that it is therefore a big responsibility for us all to make sure that there's infrastructure in place to support businesses. So the first would be to do an analysis and recognize which businesses will be at the greatest risk of being hurt and how we can then minimize that risk or support them in minimizing that risk. Providing outreach and education, how infrastructure changes might be necessary, what infrastructure changes might be necessary, and how we can support them in those changes. Education on budgeting for individuals, because if individuals are increasing their wages, they might not be eligible for support systems, support services. And that may have a great impact. And so providing that education and outreach will be very critical. And that is something that if we're supporting this, we'll have to take on. And I hope that we all consider that moving forward. And providing jobs training. I think that we do recognize that there are risks, and it'll be our responsibility to mitigate those risks so that we do minimize the negative impact on businesses in the county. So I just want to acknowledge that, you know, we have our work cut out for us if we do and if the state does pass this.
Leslin.
I will pass, Mr. Chair.
Carol.
I've had my say.
Martha.
Thank you. I really wish, Mike, that you wouldn't characterize folks on the minimum wage as you did. I think the facts are that maybe used to be mostly teenagers taking those jobs, and increasingly, especially with the recession, teenagers have been bumped out of those jobs by older and older people who can't get other jobs. And I think more than half of the people on minimum wage are women with kids. So a couple of years ago, I guess before the state started its series of wage increases, I remember being on the Chamber of Commerce Governmental Affairs Committee, and Martha Armstrong at TCAD was asked to find the research, you know, what's the evidence, what happens in economies when the wages go up. And, you know, she's the one we go to for that kind of information. And she came back and said, well, you know, some places it, you know, created jobs, and some places it, you know, there's some jobs lost, and a lot of places there was no evident effect, and basically came back and said, you know, it sort of depends. It depends on how fast it goes up, and different sectors might be affected differently. So I think that you can certainly find horror stories and, you know, scare tactics, and I am concerned about the changes in labor in our country. For example, in Kodama 3D, which I went on this tour as well, you know, gorgeous facility, you know, shiny floors, fancy, incredible fancy machines, and very, very few people working. It's like, what are we doing as a society? So I don't expect in Kodama 3D to to answer that question, but the point is there's a lot of work that has to be done by humans. Thank goodness. This resolution says it would take 6 years for this to be phased in. That's approximately $1 a year. I think that's certainly something that people can work into. I think the real answer is when we don't have a minimum wage that can support even one adult, living in our community, then the taxpayers are paying that bill. So that's a subsidy by all of us for the businesses who are hiring, and we're subsidizing that labor so the business person can make a buck. Now, I know that there are consequences in a lot of different directions. That's one reason I'm really glad we're looking at this at the state level. I think you need a large enough economy so you're not sending businesses one place or the other in order to avoid a certain wage. But certainly the state of New York can absorb this over 6 years. I think it will, my own sense is that it will definitely benefit taxpayers. It will benefit citizens. The federal minimum wage in terms of buying power peaked in 1968 and it's been going down since then. I think our economy and our labor force is very out of balance, and this is one small measure that I hope will be put in place to try to recreate a better balance.
Rich?
Mike, I appreciate the points you raised. I too, have concerns about changing the minimum wage or asking the state to do it. Certainly, the district I'm representing has a high proportion of students who a lot of them are not employed, and they're going to see the impacts of a higher minimum wage in terms of higher prices. And going to college in Ithaca is expensive as it is. So, yeah, there's real risks there. But looking at the trade-offs overall, it does seem like it's long overdue for some raise in the minimum wage. I'm going to support the resolution for a lot of reasons, but I would certainly, if the state came back and said there's going to be an exception for entry-level workers like Australia, or there's going to be a lower minimum wage if an employer is offering health benefits to their employees, I think that's all up for negotiation. I think that's a reasonable thing to look at in the broader context. I certainly agree with you that this is one piece of a larger puzzle, that we need to make sure that the whole economy is working. But I think it's an important element. And I'd finally say I agree with Martha that it's far better to approach this on a state level than Tompkins County trying to do it itself. Thanks.
Will?
A lot of good points being made. And Mike, thank you for supporting us to really think and not just pass this in without thinking. I mean, there are a lot of unintended consequences to all these things, and it's an imperfect system. I actually agree that there might be reasonable to actually have a separate category for entry-level teenage workers. But at the same time, I think we ought to look at those people that aren't even currently eligible for minimum wage, farm workers, a lot of restaurant workers who are completely tip-dependent and frequently are earning far less than the current minimum wage. So what we're doing is asking the state to look at this. I think it's going to be a work in progress. Mike, you did mention Tim Hortons. I know a lot of businesses like Subway and whatever are local franchise. I believe Tim Hortons is actually a corporate-owned entity because they were closing shops in Maine and New York. I mean, it was a very large-scale closure, of which Ithaca was just one. So, but thank you.
They're owned by Dunkin', but the franchises are local.
Jim, you want to speak?
Yes. I would have been disappointed if Mike hadn't brought up what he brought up here this evening. It's things that I've heard from not only business people, most especially I speak to a manager, owner of a SureSave in Trumansburg, New York. They have 90 employees. They're the second biggest employer in the town of Ulysses behind the school district. and Renovus is moving up, but they haven't gotten there yet. And what troubles him, SureSave is a, you know, it's a local operation in the sense that there are others, but he doesn't really, he's not a Wegmans. And he has many first-time job people, students from Trumansburg High. And they're not earning $15 an hour now. And hopefully in 2021 they might be. But, you know, it seems like simple economics to me that if you're going to pay somebody more, then I'm going to have to pay more for this or for this when I go to the store. And so I don't know how it, I wonder sometimes how it's all going to work out. And then when I think that I'm going to ask the New York State Legislature to do something about it, that's frightening. I looked at a picture on New York Daily News today of one of the three men in the room being hauled off. Another one of the three men in the room, he's going to be hauled off. And God knows what's going to happen to the governor when everyone starts talking. And I'm not accusing him of anything, but clearly, you know, people make deals when they're going to go to jail for 200 years. So, you know, I'm just hoping if this makes it to the New York State Legislature and they begin to talk about it. Another fear that I have, they're amazingly good at turning the money back to us and saying, well, you want to do this, you know, maybe you only pick up 5% this year and then a little bit more in the following year. We have ample evidence of that all over the place in our budget, our $180 million budget. It's troubling to think about it. I'm hoping that somebody in Albany can do the right thing. I'm going to support it, but I have great reservations about the whole concept unless it gets handled by far brighter people than me, but I'm not certain sometimes there are because of the way things come out. And let me give you, Dan, a plus. I think I'm so happy that the resolution and your committee, it came forward like this. Because had it come forward another way, it would have been a lot more noise here and a lot more attractiveness to people to come and talk to us. I think it's the best way we can go at this point.
Carol, then Mike, then me, and then I'd like to vote.
I just want to sum up my sense. And I'm going to use something, I'm going to paraphrase from some of the input that I got as this approached us on the agenda, this and why this isn't even enough. While some may say that raising the minimum wage is too complicated, what's really complicated is trying to live on $8.75 an hour. Just to sum it up, I'd be very embarrassed if we don't. If we can't pass this here in Tompkins County.
Mike?
I just wanted to bring up something Martha said. Martha, you shouldn't take offense to anything I said, to be honest with you. I find if people are going through a life trauma and they're trying to put their lives back together, I don't find anything wrong with them. I frankly don't find anything wrong with somebody recovering from drugs and trying to work on a job and get their life straightened out. So I was not trying to classify anybody or depict anybody in a certain way or a certain fashion. But to act like that, those people don't go to these jobs is you know, is not true. And again, I praise them for those efforts. I want those jobs to be available for them to actually make that step up. But so that's what I was referencing. Okay. Thanks.
I'd like to say just briefly that I will be supporting this, and I have the same kind of trepidation I think that Jim Dennis has mentioned there. And some of you have spoken about, I hire people, or used to, at minimum wage. It's harder than it used to be. I used to always have an intern, which I paid that. So we have to think about, are there changes in what we're going to be doing in the structure as the cost of entry-level workers goes up? But on the other hand, there are people that across the state that really need some help here. Minimum wage is doing that. It was started by the federal government, and the state has the option to make changes. I think the state is the right place to be looking at this. I think our making a statement to the state is the right way to handle this. I know there's agitation out there for other ways for the county to go to the state and try to do things locally, but to me, this needs to be a statewide initiative. Anyone else before we go to vote? Dooley, wrap it up, please.
I was not supportive of this at committee. I'm not really supportive of the governor's approach. I will support it tonight because I think it would be amazing to get something unanimous through this legislature, but I'm not even sure that's going to happen. However, for me, if I support this, it doesn't mean that I'm not willing to listen to and talk about us doing something locally.
Let's have a roll call vote, please.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Anyone wish to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
13 ayes, 1 no.
That passes. Thank you for the efforts of your committee, Dan. It's time for break. We'll take 10 minutes, and we'll come back and finish up the standing committees. We take our seats, please.
Just sold for how many billions of dollars?
Okay, let's get going. Charter Review Committee, I chair that, and we meet tomorrow at 3 o'clock here. We'll take up some rewrite of the county historian section and also continue with our revisits, which is a review of some of the things we set aside. May I answer any questions? Let's go to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis is the chair.
Not here. Yeah. Sorry. Item M, the budget appropriation and adjustments for wage and other negotiated increases, civil service, CSEA, Local 1000, AFSCME, Local 855, Management White Collar, CSEA, as well as Management Confidential. I would move that.
Is that the one you just added?
Talking about?
No. It's on the agenda.
You're talking about M.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm with you now. Thank you. We have M moved. Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn Morey. Discussion? Ready to vote? Those in favor, please raise your hands. Short roll call again.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Any noes? That's unanimous.
We had one resolution pulled from the agenda.
Yeah.
The Carol pulled it.
A.
Yes, I pulled a...
Membership, I think.
Can you move it, Jim, and then we'll
yeah.
ask Carol about it.
Let me find it.
It's on the back. There's a package page.
Yeah, it's the implementation of 2016 county budget membership.
Yeah, so I just had some questions about it.
I think I'll support it. But I
have a second for Jim.
Oh.
Let's go to Martha.
Sorry, I raised my hand.
I'm sorry. Well, they're all right there.
All right, Carol, you still got the floor.
Okay, packet page 4 we're talking about, and then the whole fee structure we got with our packets as well. So first, I just want to say I found the listing really confusing. So I just wanted to request, I'll accept it in this format for now, but when we get this in the future, can we have a column added to this that's the unit? Because some of this listing of that goes on for many, many pages of what the fees are per each. Some of them are per foot. Some of them have in the notes what the unit is, and some of them don't. So I just want to ask that in the future we have a column added so that all our departments know that they need to let us know what the number means. So that's one. I noticed that overall some of these charges and fees had a much wider spread between in the range, where there was a range in the sliding scale. And I believe in sliding scales. It's a very scary looking list to see how many items we charge the public for, the taxpaying public, nickel and diming them. We get accused of nickel and diming people, and worse. And looking at the whole list, you can see where that comes from. So I wondered if there are any of these that we, as the years go by, that we could consider, providing as a service. But certainly anywhere where we have the possibility for doing a sliding scale, use as an example those that have the wider range between the top and the bottom, and where businesses are charged at a higher rate than individuals for the same thing. Like certain records I noticed, I think from the assessment department, tax maps and things like that. And there were some other examples. Maybe we could even have a scale so that the small businesses we were talking about before can pay at a lower level than much, much larger businesses that might have more capacity to absorb the fees.
Okay.
And then some specific questions that I have. On packet page 7, the FOIL request fees, there's a line that says 25 cents per page not to exceed, and then there's no number in there not to exceed, so I'd like to know what that number is.
25 cents.
25 cents.
Not to exceed 25 cents per page? Right. But we can charge less?
Yes.
Okay.
But we can waive it.
And then I noticed in particular on packet page 13 that we charge pretty high amounts for vaccinations of various kinds. And that was an example for me of the kind of thing that it's in the public health interest to not have hepatitis B be spread or influenza or measles, mumps, rubella, pneumococcal pneumonia.
I don't believe we're spreading those things.
We're not spreading them, but it would be in our interest.
Specific questions, and then we'll
to get the whole profile here is hundreds and hundreds of dollars. And my question about it is, one, how would people know? There's in parentheses it says that a sliding fee scale is available, but what do we do to make sure that somebody knows that they can ask for the sliding scale? And is that an example of something that it's in the public interest to have us charge less for, particularly?
That might be a question you want to raise in the committee.
And then the other specific thing was, I just wonder how we define a mass gathering. There are different fees on packets, page 14 and 15, for mass gathering permits and plan reviews.
Yeah, it's done by the potential numbers like grassroots and those kinds of things. You bump up to certain numbers and then you have to add things. It costs more if you get bigger or smaller. So you try to keep it to a certain level. So whoever the promoter is of that thing doesn't have to pay the sorts of things that they're doing.
Okay, well, there's no sliding scale mentioned.
I think Jonathan has an answer.
Okay. Mass gathering is defined in the code.
Right.
And things that you have to do are related to it being a mass gathering.
You don't know what the level of the number of people.
Under the sanitary code, for mass gathering, the health department needs to do the various things, and there's a definition of what makes it a mass gathering, so they're just following the law.
Okay. Are we talking dozens of people versus thousands of people? I mean, do you remember where you draw the line?
It's not that simple because it relates to time periods, et cetera, but a dozen people would not be a mass gathering.
Okay, thank you. I'll support this. I just, as we go through the year in various committees where these kinds of things are set, we don't usually take the time to have these fees be reviewed by committees. And so maybe next year, as the year goes on and the budget comes closer, it would be a good opportunity for committees to ask to see it from the departments before it's in the budget, and we're not really having a good opportunity to talk about it before we pass the budget.
I have Martha, then Jim.
Well, as a matter of fact, I know from HHS that my memory, I haven't been on in a couple of years, but my memory is that all of them come to the committee ahead of time. My sense is also that many of these are set by law or code or some requirements that we are held to. I think this is the wrong time to be talking about these kind of issues. I think I recommend, Carol, that you follow the agendas and make sure you get to every one of our committees where there are fees attached if you have these kinds of questions. My memory is also, especially as related to HHS kinds of fees, maybe this is true of others, I don't know, that by law we are not allowed to charge more than it actually costs to administer whatever the review or code, you know, or approval or whatever the service is. In fact, we kind of lost a lawsuit with the town of Ithaca, as I remember, over water service fees, water inspections. So this is, and then the idea about kind of doing all this for, you know, free, meaning not charging extra for a particular service, is a kind of interesting philosophical idea, which suggests that county property taxes, broader taxes, are going to have to go way up to cover services that specific individuals use, not necessarily, you know, appropriate for, you know, a broad-based, like everybody uses assessment, everybody, you know, has access to the basic health department or social services or et cetera. But, you know, specific services like these, I think it's a good thing that we charge individuals as opposed to putting all of this on the general property tax levy.
Jim?
No, I will.
So, Martha, I don't think I heard Carol calling for free. I heard called her for promoting sliding scale where appropriate and making it clear.
She started out talking about being nickel and dime.
And nickel and dime is actually a good description of many of our fees. You're completely right that many of these are set by code or law. They are discussed at some length in committee, but I think it's also entirely appropriate for us to look at this and say, you know, what is the cumulative effect? Could we be doing better? Do these make sense? So I thank Carol for bringing this up.
All right, ready to vote? All right, on the resolution to adopting the fee schedule, please, those in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Okay. Old Library Committee has not had any.
I believe I added one resolution.
Oh, yes, you're right. You did add one.
And it is a...
I tried to get you to do it before the other one.
Changes in positions, various departments, and I would move that, and after a second I will talk about it.
Seconded by Dave.
And these are things that we've already done. They're in the budget, and it will facilitate Steve Estes and the personnel department to make these changes and do the things they need to do, I believe, to adjust the salaries.
Just salaries, and also this is a part of the pension system, that we need to let the pension system know early on, you know, what the positions are and how what their work week is, so they can give them proper credit.
Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous.
We are having a meeting in combination with Health and Human Services December 3rd. Right here, and it's my understanding that Health and Human Services will go first, and then we will get together to do the one item on the agenda. And that was a change. I was requested by the chair of that committee to move the two, and I agree that I think it would work better for Peter's committee to go that way.
Questions, Martha?
So if we just want to come for the item about mental health and public health, what time should we come? Do we have a guess?
3:30.
That would be my guess.
Okay.
And the budget committee side of it, right?
That's when that item will be discussed when you're meeting, you have a joint meeting, right?
I mean, my picture of it is... Their committee is doing what they're going to do. The budget committee has two of his members, and then we will do what we think we will do at that point, at 3:30 or so.
Okay.
But all of the Health and Human Service people will be here.
At 3:30.
Will?
Yeah, but you have business before.
So, Jim, my understanding was that this was a joint committee. Jim?
I'm sorry?
My understanding was that this was going to be a joint committee meeting.
Well, yeah, it is a joint meeting, but, you know, the resolution we have on the budget committee is Joe's resolution to...
Right, so it seems that committee would vote on that resolution or anything else as a committee independently, but that the larger discussion was happening between the two committees. Was I misinformed?
Yeah, But HHS is doing their – how many items do you have, Peter? One?
We have two items.
You have two items. They're going to do theirs at 3 o'clock.
At 3 o'clock. So I'm confused.
Or whenever his meeting. Yeah, 3 o'clock.
My understanding is that was 3:30. Is that correct?
3 o'clock.
You know what?
But let's get this clear so no one's confused on this. The meeting starts at 3 o'clock.
Right.
With HHS, it's on its regular
right here.
Agenda. And then at 3:30, it's the joint meeting?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm following his lead on the time spent on the HHS part of the meeting.
Is
that right?
So, okay. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, if you think we can get ours done in a half an hour, then that's
excuse me?
If you think that we can get the HHS... work done in 30 minutes, then that works.
I think it will happen a lot better if we have that endpoint, that otherwise I think it could drift for a long, long time. And I think it's enough time.
Okay.
I just would point out, Kathy Covert is saying that it's been posted for the joint meeting at 3 o'clock.
Okay.
So
well,
you may have
whatever.
To fudge a little bit through there.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Is there a way to put on... the agenda that's online or a note somewhere, because the agenda that got circulated, that we all got, if you look at the written agenda, it calls for the joint meeting starting at 3 o'clock, and then at some point, I think, after a few items, to go out of the joint committee and call to order just the HSS H.
Yeah, we're changing that order.
Okay.
I mean, it did go out before.
Committee.
But I think it's important that we deal with the thing that we have to deal with in that order.
Okay. And then I also just want to let you know I requested that we have copies distributed to the whole committee and hard copy there for us of the resolution that had actually come out of Health and Human Services Committee in the past about
request,
the joint
that request
topic.
Was made.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Right.
Yes. Okay.
All right. Anything else, Jim?
No. Well, one final thing. I think our last meeting will be in the 28th. Is that it? Wow, 28th. Knock yourself out for that one. December 28th will be the last budget meeting. Thank you.
As I started to say before, the old library committee is not met. That only meets at this point on as-needed basis. Back to Jim for public safety.
We have a budget adjustment to transfer funds from the fund balance to the medical and boarding unit, and I will move that wherever it is.
Is there a second? Second by Peter Stein. Discussion? Jim?
Comment. It came to my attention, and many of us, that we were talking about this in the sense that it is a fund balance in a medical and boarding unit portion of the sheriff's office. And I had a conversation with Joe about this and how it's put together in our budget. There are separate items that it's in real time in the budget. There's a boarding portion. There's a medical portion. But the way this is put together in terms of how it works for the county budgeting system, that's why these words are put together the way it is. And Joe can do it better, and Rick probably, than I can, but I think I'm close to right.
Yeah, you want me to just?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Reinforce that. Yeah, there was a question about why this resolution refers to medical and boarding if what we're really looking at is medical expenses. It's because we have a functional unit in our budget. It's almost like a department. It's a subdivision of the sheriff's department. So if you look in your budget, you'll see something called medical and boarding. That's why this resolution has that title. In that account, we have both medical and boarding expenses. So when you look at the budget that you were reviewing, for 2015, it showed about $400,000 for both. That's a rolled-up budget. So in that rolled-up budget are medical expenses and boarding expenses. So you are adjusting, by this resolution, you are adjusting only the medical part of that budget. You're putting more money into those medical expenses. So I don't know if that makes it clearer or muddier, but again, if you want to know where the money is going, it's going to medical expenses. If you want to know, is this kind of an anomaly year, or have we under-budgeted this chronically and we're just catching up? And so we've gone back to the actual expenditures over the past several years. The budget is actually very close to what we've been experiencing in the past several years for medical expenses. This year is an anomaly year. We've had some very large costs that have driven this over budget. If you recall, that's different than board outs, which we did a month ago. There we have been chronically under budgeting board outs. We raised those in the 2016 budget. So very long answer to a very short question. This is going for medical. We've done the projections. We agree with the sheriff that is going to run about $104,000 short. It's going to the right place. And let's hope this is just a very unusual year and things get back to normal in 2016.
Okay. Ready to vote? More people want to talk. Martha and then Dooley.
Just for the sake of kind of tracking it more easily, visibly, is there any functional reason those two are together?
Well, I talked to Rich earlier. This may be one where we can break it up fairly easily for next year. There's some others that are really, there's a tangle of different accounts. This one might be easy for us to break out. We can certainly report on it from time to time in two separate accounts.
Yes, I had every intention of turning in some wording changes for Resolution N, but I didn't get it done today. So I'm going to move an amendment. And Jim, you were forewarned about it, I think. I just didn't get it done. So in line 3 and 4, to change it to read, whereas the sheriff's office has had a large number of inmates incarcerated in 2015 who have very specific health needs. That's the change I'd like to make to that first whereas. I move it, unless you think it's friendly.
I'm going to be friendly.
Is it friendly to the seconder?
Who is it?
Peter.
Who's seconded?
Peter, is that friendly to you?
Yeah, that's friendly.
Okay.
Yeah,
go really. Ahead, Dooley.
Thank you. I just
don't make a habit of this, though, okay?
No,
come on.
Too late.
If you wouldn't beat me up this way, it would be all right.
No, I wouldn't.
You've suffered enough.
In line 11, that the Director of Finance be and hereby is directed.
Okay.
That's
fine. Thank you, Dooley.
Thank you, Jim.
Is that okay, Peter?
Yes, great.
All right. With those friendly amendments, we're going to need a short form roll call vote. Got it right this time.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Any noes? That's unanimous.
The next meeting of the Public Safety Committee is December 21st. I will try to bring some snacks for you, or bring your own, whatever. chocolate, those of you who eat that. It is pre-Christmas, so hopefully we can do it quickly. Thank you. That concludes my public.
Thank you, Jim. Now let's go to minutes of November 10. Someone want to move them? Peter? Seconded by Rich. Discussion? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Let's take the minutes of November 17th. Who wants to move those? Peter? Seconded by Leslin. Discussion? Those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed. Any unfinished business? Will?
Just a reminder, I think there's a holiday party for departmental staff, whatever, coming up next week. I'm looking at Joe as if he might know, but I had it in my calendar for the 11th. Does anybody know about that? And I've gone a couple times. I don't know if other people, but it's a really nice opportunity to meet the people that do good work for us from various departments. It's a dish to pass, and it's usually a lot of good food and interesting people to talk with. It's, I assume, in the old jail, unless they've changed. So I would encourage people to go.
When is that?
That is the 11th, which is Friday. Not this Friday, but a week from Friday.
Lunchtime.
Lunchtime. Thank you. Noon.
Jim?
One final comment, Mike. Those of you who have your electronic devices with you, try Googling the Buffalo Chronicle newspaper.
I'm sure all those electronic devices have been silenced at this point.
Yeah, well, do it anyway.
Buffalo Chronicle.
All right. Now what we're going to do is I'm going to ask for a resolution to go into executive session to discuss personnel matters, particular personnel, and contract negotiations. We will come out of this executive session and adjourn the meeting without taking action. It's my belief that's what will happen. So can I get a motion to go into executive session? By Carol Chalk, seconded by Dooley Kiefer. All those in favor of the executive session, please raise your hand. Those opposed? One opposed.